Good afternoon and welcome to Open Air, KLW's weekly radio magazine of the performing arts. I'm your host, David Latulippe. This week I'll collude with Russian soprano, mezzo-soprano Ekaterina Semenchuk, who sings the part of Santuzza in the San Francisco opera production of Cavalleria Rusticana, which opens the season tomorrow evening with its expected double bill of Pagliacci. Katrina McGraw from San Francisco Playhouse talks about their Rising Stars program, a theater attendance program for local high school kids. She'll be joined by two former participants of the program, Quentin Berenger and Kaya Lehr-Love. Playwright and performer Alicia Dattner stops by to share details about her stand-up comedy show One Life Stand, a modern girl's guide to enlightenment and other disorders. Together with her ukulele, she discovers all kinds of things that you'll learn about. It's at the Marsh in Berkeley through the end of the month. Plus, I'll check in with conductor Martin Segelke, as artistic director of the San Francisco Wind Ensemble, about their upcoming season. Stay with us. German conductor Dr. Martin Segelke is the founding artistic director and conductor of the San Francisco Wind Ensemble, a professional-level wind ensemble here in the Bay Area, and recently took a position as music professor and administrator at the University of South Florida, St. Petersburg. Martin also taught here at SF State, as well as at Illinois State University, the College of Marin, the University of Minnesota Morris, and the Eastman School of Music, among others. He's also an accomplished clarinetist. The Wind Ensemble recently completed its CD recording at Skywalker Ranch, and to talk about that and their upcoming concert, I'm pleased to be joined by Martin by phone from Florida. Martin, how are you?
I am doing well, David. Thank you so much for having us, and thank you for the wonderful introduction. I feel almost like a celebrity right now, so thank you.
Sure. Well, I hope you're staying out of the path of Gordon. That's the main thing.
Yes, and our hearts, of course, go out to those poor folks at the northern Gulf Coast that were way more impacted than we were. We got a couple of rain showers and thunderstorms, but luckily we survived pretty well here.
Great. And you're making a regular pilgrimage back to the left coast for the Wind Ensemble, but tell us a little bit about the work that you're doing in Florida.
Absolutely. Well, the work here is pretty simple. It's mostly administrative work. I'm part of the dean's office here in the College of Arts and Sciences, and my main task is to do the schedule for the entire College of Arts and Sciences, also help colleagues here with tenure and promotion, oversee that whole process and things like that. And, of course, you know, teach music classes. Since USF St. Pete does not have a full-blown performance music program, that is mostly concerned with the general education as in music appreciation classes. But it's a lot of fun, and I meet a lot of wonderful students from many different areas and majors, so it's a really fun task to do here.
And it's fortunate that you have such a schedule that you can still come and be a part of the San Francisco Wind Ensemble. So tell us exactly how that works. You've got an amazing group of people that just get together for some very brief rehearsals, yet the concerts are extraordinary.
Oh, thank you. The musicians of the San Francisco Wind Ensemble, now in our seventh season actually, are just truly 100%, 110% dedicated. They're absolute pros. So the way we can pull this off is that about a month or two in advance, we send out all the sheet music. We send if they're existing demo recordings out, and people just study very diligently. Some sections even get together prior to our first rehearsal, four sectionals, and they prepare to the very highest possible level. And then I fly out. I usually get in on Friday, so we have a Friday evening rehearsal. We have a Saturday afternoon dress rehearsal, and then Saturday night is the concert.
And that
everybody... Pardon me?
Sure, go ahead.
No, I was just going to say, and since everybody just comes as a professional and really approaches it with that kind of attitude, it's possible to actually do this, and keeps it fresh, keeps it very exciting, and we're working with a very high level of concentration, but it makes it a lot of fun.
We should mention that that concert is Saturday, September 15th at 7:30. The concert is at Aragon High School in San Mateo on Alameda de las Pulgas. Tell us about the program that has been assembled for this.
Well, the program, as you know, we try to be a little bit more eclectic, not your typical kind of neighborhood band kind of concert. While we're opening with a good old standard, which is Sousa's Fairest of the Fair March, just to get everybody in the right mood, we're continuing with Ernst Toch's Spiel für Blasorchester, the good old 1926 classic that was composed for the Donaueschingen Musiktage at that time. And not many people know this piece anymore. It's been a little bit sanded over and a little bit forgotten, but it's truly a gem of the repertoire in its quirkiness and its original kind of rugged approach towards composition. It's truly a gem, and we're really going to have a good time with that. Then a Bay Area composer, Brett Abigania, he composed a piece called Lux Contrapunctum, and it's a fairly recent addition to the repertoire, a brand new piece. It's only been premiered and I believe performed once or twice since, so it's going to be pretty fresh off the press, so we're very excited to produce that. And then the big culminant piece of the evening will be Ida Gotkovsky's Concerto for Wind Ensemble. She is originally has Russian heritage but has been spending most of her life in France, still lives in Paris, was born in 1933, so she's definitely getting up there. And her language is very much so kind of a neo-impressionistic kind of approach. And we have performed some of her music before, and this is probably the longest, largest, and by far the most difficult piece of hers that we've attempted yet. So we're definitely looking forward to the challenge.
Well, that name is familiar to those that would be interested in the San Francisco Wind Ensemble's fine recording that was recently done at the Skywalker Ranch. Tell us about that.
Actually, the Skywalker Ranch recordings were a little bit further in the past. We very, very most recently, in fact, as recent as this June, did a recording at Hillsdale High School, and we brought in Bruce Leek as a very fine sound engineer and Brad Ginevra as our producer, and they actually set up their equipment at the high school auditorium, who graciously hosted us, and we recorded there. And unfortunately, you know, Skywalker was a little bit out of our range for this project, but the sound recording is really a phenomenal quality, and we don't really have a firm confirmation about the release yet, but we're hoping that either late this year or early 2019 we'll come out with a brand new recording, and we're very excited about that. It's going to have truly international repertoire on it, a little bit of Bay Area music again by Bobby Chastain, then some music from Russia, music from Germany, music from Spain. So it's going to be a truly international, very, very exciting album, truly representative of what the San Francisco Wind Ensemble stands for.
Well, it's a one-of-a-kind ensemble, that's for sure, almost on the entire West Coast, so you'd be fortunate to catch this concert on the 15th if you can. We do have a bit of an excerpt from Gotovsky's, from the recording from 2014, from the Poème de Feu. We're going to go out with that. Martin, we wish you a wonderful concert on the 15th. Safe travels, and stay
Thank
out
you,
of
David.
The storm, would you?
Really appreciate it. Thank you.
All right, cheers. Dr. Martin Sagelka is the conductor of the San Francisco Wind Ensemble. Their concert coming up on September 15th, 7:30 at Aragon High School in San Mateo. More information about that and the good work that the Wind Ensemble is doing at their website, sfwindensemble.com. Quem de Fu, Ida Gutowski's recording, San Francisco Wind Ensemble.com for more information about that recording and their upcoming concert. Good afternoon to you once again. I'm David LaTulip. You're listening to Open Air here on Local Public Radio, KALW San Francisco. Joined now by Katrina McGraw from San Francisco Playhouse to talk about their Rising Stars program. Also joined by two of the former members of that program, Quentin Berenger, who's from the class of 2015 and is currently studying web design at the Academy of Art University in San Francisco. He's one of the producers for Ideation, as well as the set designer and graphic designer. Welcome, Quentin.
Thank you for having me.
Joined by class of 2018, Kyalera Love. She's the producer, actor, and prop master for the show and continues to write as she majors in theater at City College of San Francisco. Welcome to you, Kaya.
Thank you for having me as well.
And director Katrina, welcome to you. Tell us about how this Rising Stars program got started.
The Rising Stars program got started over about 10 years ago. I was not there. I'm newly there. I've been there for 2 years now. And it is the Playhouse's theater attendance program. So we get students from all over the Bay Area to come see shows at the Playhouse for free. It's completely free. They don't have to pay for anything. And the only thing that we ask in return is that they write thank you letters to their sponsors. We collect those and we send them to their sponsors who are patrons of the arts or patrons of San Francisco Playhouse.
Mm-hmm. Susie Damilov and Bill English, founders of the program and of SF Playhouse, have done an extraordinary job. And it's such a beautiful theater. Tell us about your first theatrical experience at SF Playhouse, Quentin.
Way back in my freshman year, I was asked if I wanted to join the Rising Stars program, and I thought it was a great idea. You know, you get to see four shows a season for free, so, you know, what's not to love? the SF Playhouse actually switched to their current location. I went to see them when they were first at their previous location. The first show I saw was called Period of Adjustment, and I remember being so interested in the complicated and intricate set that they had. One of my favorite parts was that in the middle of the play, there was an earthquake. I believe it was written in, but honestly, I can't quite remember. But the entire play, the entire set cracked in half. And it blew my mind. Like, something of that scale to happen in such a small space was so, you know, bewildering to me. And I just loved it so much.
And so that probably fostered your love of stage design.
Absolutely.
Nice, nice. How about you, Kaya? When did you first experience the Playhouse?
Back in 2014 when I was also a freshman, and the first play I ever saw there was Ideation. And so Ideation has always had kind of a special place in my heart, but Ideation is such a text-based play, and it was just these four people talking in a room, but it just brought me to this whole other place, and I'd never really experienced theater before, and I just remember coming home that night to my parents and just, I couldn't stop talking about it. I felt like I had had like a couple cups of coffee. I was just so excited. It gave me just such this warmth inside. And so really, San Francisco Playhouse really exposed me to this beautiful art that now it's just my whole life now.
Well, let's talk a little bit about Ideation, and now what's happening with it is you're actually producing it elsewhere.
That's right. A couple of us have been wanting to do an alumni show through our old high school for a long time now. And there's been talks about it for years. And this summer, this spring, we decided, you know, this is it. We're finally going to do this. And so Kaya and I went to our director, Ian Enriquez, and said, hey, do you want to do this with us? And he was like, sure. So this play Ideation was kind of, you know, all of our favorite play at the moment, so we decided to do this and, you know, get started on that project, and it's finally here.
Well, we need to talk about Aaron Loeb's Ideation. I saw the production. It was shocking and wonderfully done, and I think we're going to have to give away some plot details here.
Okay.
Because it's important to understand how timely, really, this, it seems almost like it's prescient the way this show is coming to be at this time of our life. It's almost the normalization of this sort of a thing. Now, this sort, tell our audience what we're talking about, this sort of a thing. Maybe you can explain a little bit of the plot of Ideation.
Well, it's basically these four people who have been given an assignment to create a system to basically get rid of dead bodies. And so, when you talk about normalization, it's kind of like, you know, at first they're like, okay, well, logistically, how are we going to do this? How are we going to create these places to get rid of all these dead bodies almost?
And we don't even know at the beginning that they're actually talking about people at this point.
Yeah, they're just talking about, like, how are we going to get rid of all these bodies rather than, you know, these are people they're talking about. And they eventually come to that realization, like, oh my gosh, like, what are we creating at this point? And so it kind of spirals out of control after that. And I think that's the really interesting part about it, is that they're all just talking about it. It's, again, in this day and age and how things are so normalized in the media and stuff, and how we're almost just akin to violence nowadays and how we're so used to it.
Mm-hmm. Katrina McGraw, this is unusual. I mean, is the Playhouse at all involved in this production, or are they out on their own for this?
They they came up on their own, but they did reach out to us, Ian, let us know that it was happening, and we have let them know that we can help them in any way that they can, and we have flyers up all over the Playhouse letting people know that this is happening, and we're supporting them as much as we can.
We should mention that it is opening night, isn't it?
Yes, it is.
Yeah. Opening day of opening night, tonight and tomorrow, as well as the following week. And tell us about the venue, the theater.
Yes, so since this is through our old high school, we decided to actually produce it and set it at the old high school. We have two theaters at the high school. There's the main auditorium, of course, where there are, you know, main announcements and things like that. But then for the theater department, there's a very small theater. It's actually literally called the Little Theater. But it's off to the side. It's about 120 seats. It's very, I wouldn't say cramped, but it's cozy. And it's
personal.
Yes, very personal.
Mm-hmm.
And so that's actually, you know, much better for this because it's a very personal play. But yes, the venue is very cozy and personal, and you really feel like you're kind of there with them in the conference room.
Mm-hmm. So what sort of expenses are incurred in putting on a production like this?
The main expense that we had to overcome, I guess, is one way of putting it, would be the rights to the play itself.
Hmm.
And that we just did online. It's, you know, so easy nowadays. I could just go through a website. And so we just did that online, and that was a bulk of our budget. And then we've also been doing printing for the posters as well as the programs, and those were the other two kind of larger chunks. But otherwise, it's, you know, little things here and there, like the paint for the set, or little props that we need to buy, costume pieces, things like that, just all over the place. But the bulk was the rights and the printing, I think.
Mm-hmm. And tell us about the cast.
Well, it's an alumni production, and so it's all alumni. We have another 2018, Razzle Ruiz. And then we also have Alan Burkett, which is class of
2014, I believe, maybe 15?
Yeah, a while ago.
A while ago.
And everybody else on the production crew as well, doing sound and lighting or backstage, just helping out. Everybody is an alumni, so this is really an alumni production. But Razzle was in my class, and he did theater from his junior year to his senior year, and it was in all the productions. And Alan was mostly in improv with Ian, and that's how we all know Ian, as Ian was our improv instructor, and Alan only did one production his whole time being in high school. But now I guess he just kind of, we reached out to him and he said yeah, and he auditioned, and now here he is, and he's doing a fantastic job.
Yeah,
and
he seems to be loving it.
Yeah.
We also have Henry Montero. He was also class of 2015 with
mm-hmm.
me, as well as Martin Novitsky. I think he was in the same class as Alan. I'm not too sure, but also one of the older alumni.
Mm-hmm. That's Quentin Berenger with Kaya Lair Love talking about Ideation, which will be presented at Abraham Lincoln High School, their little theater, tonight, tomorrow, and next weekend, same times. They're alumni of the Rising Stars program at San Francisco Playhouse. Coordinator Katrina McGraw, tell us a little bit about what's happening with this year's crop of participants.
Well, we actually just had our first round of Rising Star students come this week. So it's really exciting to have the freshmen who are coming in who have never experienced this.
Wide-eyed and slack-jawed.
Have no idea what's happening. We give them snacks at intermission, and they're like, these are for us? This is going to be great. but it's really great to see the shift that happens from their first time coming in and just having no idea what's going to happen, and by the time they're seniors and they're coming in, they want to know exactly. They're like, how long is it? When is intermission? You know, who's in it? Because, you know, they see the same actors sometimes in different shows, and recognizing those people and from the 4 years that they're in the program, really getting to see how the Playhouse works in a way. You know, you see similar faces, you see, it's just like a return home, I guess you can say. But I'm really excited for these new batch of kids to get to experience it.
Do you have a moment to tell us a little bit about the San Francisco Playhouse season?
Yeah. We have, so we're finishing off the end of the season right now with Sunday in the Park with George closing this weekend.
Terrific production, by the way.
Yeah, thank you. And we're starting with You Mean to Do Me Harm, which we had a world premiere with the Sandbox series last season. And then we have our Mary Poppins, the musical, for our holiday show. And then we go into The King of Yees, which is also a newer works that was done in San Francisco as well. What is after King of Yees is Significant, Yoga Play, and then Significant Other, and then we close it out with Cabaret.
Fantastic. She did that well, all without notes, I should add, audience.
I did it up from memory.
And Quentin, I don't mean to put you on the spot, but you do web design. Now, is there a web page we can go to learn more about this production?
Yes.
Oh, good. All right.
We decided this time to host our tickets through a third party. We think that can, you know, help people kind of, you know, make the commitment to, you know, buy tickets and show up. But you can buy tickets at alhs-ideation.yapsody.com. That's yapsody.com.
Fantastic. We'll put that on our website as well at klw.org on the open air page. Katrina McGraw, Quentin Berenger, Kaya Lair Love have a wonderful production. We hope to see upcoming productions at SF Playhouse. Katrina, and a reminder that sfplayhouse.org is where you can go to not only learn about the program, but to support the Rising Star program.
Mm-hmm.
Thanks for coming in.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Coming up a little later in the hour, I'll be talking with Ekaterina Semenchuk about the San Francisco Opera's production of Cavalleria Rusticana on the bill with Pagliacci. Also have some juicy orchestral excerpts to share with you for that. Next, another wonderful show at the Marsh Berkeley. Alicia Dattner shares her Modern Girl's Guide to Enlightenment and Other Disorders with her stand-up comedy show One Life Stand. She comes equipped with ukulele and will share everything from how to floss in a sexy way to how to tell you if you're a love avoidant person, how to spot a narcissist in the wild, and how to win at heteronormative dating. She joins me now to tell us a little bit about the show. Welcome, Alicia.
Thanks.
Well, is this self-history, autobiographical, or a combination of fact and fiction?
Pretty self-history, yeah.
So when did you come up with the idea for the show?
Oh, well, I've been writing a lot of new stand-up lately, and it was just time to put all these ideas I have out into the world.
Can you share with us, I imagine you're going through different characters in the show as well. Can you share with us a couple of those characters?
Yeah, I mean, it's a little more stand-up than a solo performance, so it's but definitely there is the characters. I mean, I do a little political stuff. And definitely have, I would say, different parts of my body are speaking and sharing different perspectives of how they feel about dating. So
we should mention that you are also the publisher of a self-help book, which we can't say entirely on here, Getting Stuff Done, shall we say.
It's a parody of Getting Things Done.
Okay.
Which is a totally awesome organizational book by this guy, David Allen. And I just, you know, I read it and I thought it was awesome, but it seemed totally untenable. So I wrote my own version.
And here's something that I don't get to say often. I have someone in the studio who started a circus.
That's true.
What was the circus?
It was completely ridiculous. It was called The Latest Show on Earth, which is like a quadruple entendre. And we had, you know, the world's tallest midget and smallest giant. We had the emotional escape artist. We had so many delightful man-eating chicken. We had that one. We toured around the country.
Uh-huh. And I see a recurring theme in that you had a off-Broadway show that was called The Oi of Sex.
Yes. I like puns.
I guess so. What was that show like?
That was a show of my dating history from start to finish. Well, I don't know. I guess not finish, but it's still going on. Pretty racy, and also I think bringing a lot of light and humor into some challenging subjects.
Let's get back to One Life Stand. Tell us some of the different things I mentioned in the introduction, some of the topics that are explored, but give us your take on it.
Yeah, well, I've spent a lot of time meditating and going to personal growth workshops and doing yoga. And I take every opportunity I can to make fun of that path that I am dedicated to very seriously. So, you know, if you want to laugh about, you know, transcending the ego or trying to meditate and having a lot of ideas race through your head,
Or drinking at yoga, totally.
Well, it's just, it's a little reference to a joke I have. So I kind of hated how, like, you know, I love yoga, but I hate how yoga teachers get really uptight about how I should practice yoga. Like, I was really thirsty. I was in class. I took a drink. And the teacher was like, yeah, it's not good to drink water during class. And I'm like, that's okay. It's coffee. I mean, at least it wasn't bourbon, right?
Yeah, true enough. All right. Would you be willing to share with us a bit of the show?
Yeah, well, that was a little surreptitious bit I snuck in there.
Okay,
I smuggled it in. Yeah, what else? A little on the spot here. So I'm the oldest of three kids. I'll share with you. There's me, and there's mom and dad. My dad's family is Jewish. My mom's family is atheist, so I want to marry a doctor who's good enough for me. But I don't believe he exists. My dad is a dermatologist, actually, which is why I have such great shoes. Okay, we got one there.
Very nice. Very nice. The show is at the Marsh Berkeley, which is on Alston Way. What's that venue like? I haven't been to the Marsh Berkeley. I've been to the one in San Francisco.
It's really sweet. They have two theaters, and I think Dan Hoyle is in the other theater at the same time.
Great
guy.
And
he's so great.
Yeah.
And we're playing at the same time, so we can't catch each other's shows, but we get to kind of be backstage and rehearse a little together. Not together, but, you know, separately together. And the cabaret is where I'm doing my show, and it's really fun. It's like, feels kind of like a bar / comedy club, but it's has the intimacy of a theater, and I love that.
Mm-hmm. This is being directed by Tom Bentley Fisher. You are the writer and performer. What did Tom bring to, did he rein you in? Did he do some judicious editing from, what's his role?
He is so brilliant. Tom is like he's like the quintessential director, where he just sees inside of your soul and he sees your potential and how you can unlock and open to the next thing. So he's really helped me not just do stand-up comedy, but bring a deeper level of authenticity and ease and a whole bunch of acty things that I can't quite explain, but it's has to do with angles.
Okay. All right. The show runs through the 29th of September at the Marsh Berkeley, themarsh.org. For more information, Alicia Dattner is an award-winning comedian who's performed all over the world. Be well to learn a little bit about her one life stand, maybe get some self-help tips on how to floss sexy. We didn't get to that part.
No, I didn't show you that.
Well, you could,
I don't know if it'll work on the radio.
Alicia Dattner, thanks for coming in. TheMarsh.org for more information. What's coming up for you after this? Always a dangerous question for an actress or comedian.
Right. But, well, we shot this as a pitch for a comedy special, so I am hoping that someone at Netflix will just say, wow, that's amazing, I want to pick it up, or Amazon or Hulu or whatever, and I'm working on a TV pilot.
Well,
and a new show.
Okay, well, let's have you come back for to discussion of that one.
That'd be great.
Alicia Dattner, themarsh.org, about her one person show, One Life Stand. Catch the show if you can. Thanks for coming in.
Thanks for having me.
Of course. Well, not since, I guess 2003 have San Francisco opera audiences heard the double bill of Pietro Mascagni's Cavalleria Rusticana and Ruggiero Leoncavallo's Pagliacci. Those two short, ultra-verismo operatic chestnuts opened the 2018-19 San Francisco opera season Friday evening and will continue for an additional 6 performances through the end of the month under the baton of Daniele Calegari, who will be making his conducting debut with the company. Director Jose Cura has chosen to set this double bill as a tribute to the Italian immigration of early 1900s Argentina, a production that premiered in Belgium in 2012 and later in Buenos Aires. And he's chosen to have both operas share the same set, an unusual move that even sees characters from one, the clowns from Pagliacci, posting their company posters in one scene in Cavalleria Rusticana. In Pagliacci, tenor Marco Berti sings the role of Canio, the clown who sings the famous Vesti la Giuba aria, with Armenian soprano Liana Harutunian as Neda among the cast. And in Cavalleria, the errant lover Turidu is sung by Roberto Aranica, and soprano Ekaterina Semenchuk is the featured mezzo-soprano as the abandoned lover Santuzza. I caught up with Ekaterina earlier this week at the Opera House. Here's that conversation. Ekaterina, welcome to Open Air.
Thank you very much.
Well, this will mark your third appearance here at San Francisco Opera. You made your debut in 2015 for Louisa Miller, returning the following year in Aida. But audiences were treated to your voice well prior to that, back in 2006, in recital at Cal Performances in Berkeley with other emerging artists from the Mariinsky Academy. Congratulations on what has been such a steady career trajectory.
No, but I was alone that time. It was a recital. Me and my pianist, Larissa Gergieva, with whom we did many recitals around the world, also in Berkeley, Call Performance, and many other places like Argentina. But it was exactly my recital with own program. And probably Larissa, she came back several times with other singers, but that performance, I remember like it happened yesterday. Mm-hmm. It was such a warm reception and hospitality from the people, from the public. And I was so touched because program was totally Russian. I did some encores in French and I think Italian, but mostly like all program, very difficult. You know, when you don't know the text, if they had a list with a text, but it was not really what you can feel if you know the music. So you have always doubts, you're going to be understandable or not mm-hmm. with the audience. But the main thing in our job, what united us, that music is more powerful than any language, any borders, anything. You know, the music and feeling through the people. So if you singing and you live with a full open heart, so each person will understand you exactly. So when I'm performing around the world now in different languages, in German, in Italian, in French, in Russian, Spanish, so I always sure, and I know my public is always waiting for me and understand me. Mm-hmm. This is the main also reason I'm working as a performer, as a singer, because this is the music always lead me.
Mm-hmm. Well, the roles that you've taken since your debut and before really cover a broad range of the great mezzo-soprano roles, from Fricka and Das Rheingold, Lady Macbeth, title roles in Carmen and Samson and Delilah. Mm-hmm. Is it possible at this stage of your career to have a favorite role?
You know, being young mezzo, it's very difficult to choose right programs, right roles to perform, because it's very difficult. You should be very careful to take not too early some roles, like Amneris, like Ulrika, like Eboli, other. I'm not talking about Lady Macbeth and Santuzza, mm-hmm. because I think this is the most difficult roles, not only vocally, but not technically even, mm-hmm. because it should be you should have very good technique to perform those roles, and not only sing in the auditorium for the music rehearsal, because when you're on stage you're acting, and it will draw you somewhere, but you should stay very clear and very focused, what are you doing? And you should be very, very good with your technique. So when I started as a young artist, and same time I was a student in conservatorium in St. Petersburg, so I was doing many things I learned there, and I travel a lot with Mariinsky Theater abroad and with Larisa Gergieva with our recitals. So I try to choose always program for my voice. So since I start till 2009, 2011, I didn't perform hard roles, and even I did like La Mort de Cléopâtre de Berlioz by Berlioz. It's a big cantata for the voice, very dramatic music, 25 minutes orchestra and voice. It's a big picture of last minutes of Cleopatra, who is going to die. It's very moving, very difficult music, and very dramatic music. And also you should be prepared to, you know, because emotions sometimes so high and you cannot control yourself. Mm. You're always like on the wind, you know, sometimes. But you should be very, very stable and resistible to be protected by your knowledge, by your skills, to be more solid, let's say.
Are there roles that you're looking forward to exploring a little bit further down in your career?
It's difficult. Yeah. It's very difficult. But I tell you, till 2011, my first Amneris, I was always dreaming about the roles like Amneris. My first big role, big difficult role, was Dido in Les Troyens. Since I start to sing these drama roles, it happened very fast, because the time was correct to start to sing this. Mm-hmm. But I'm singing all my repertoire, which I've done for around 20 years. Mm-hmm. So I continue to sing something from my past.
Mm-hmm. Well, every upcoming role must come with a great deal of anticipation and excitement. But is there one particular role or stage or venue that you're looking particularly forward to playing?
New roles.
Not necessarily new, maybe a new stage that you haven't been on.
I really like to return to the theaters and stages when I already performed, like here. I feel very warm and nice on stage. So I would love to come back and perform more different roles, but from bel canto music as maybe La Favorita and Anna Boleyn, which I did in Vienna Staatsoper, for example, with Anna Netrebko. And I'm going to sing this season in Bordeaux with Marina Rebecca. New production for me. And of course, I would love to perform here, for example, Russian music like Khovanchina and French music like Les Troyens or Sanson Delilah or La Demoiselle du Faust. Many roles I would love to perform, even I performed once in my life or never. For example, Khovanchina, Marfa. This is particularly Russian mezzo role, but I never did it in my life. So I'm looking forward to perform this season first time in La Scala, a new production with Valery Gergiev. And I hopefully this role will be mine for entire life, for all my, you know. Because some roles you feel like you're ready but not ready, you know. It's always a question of your mental feeling. How do you feel? You already ready or not? Because to sing, for example, Lady Macbeth, which is one of my favorite roles, one of the difficult role for all voices who performed or going to perform this role, like soprano, mezzo soprano, doesn't matter. Here's the question: are you able to perform and sing this role or not? Mm-hmm. So,
what about contemporary music? I noticed on your resume that you performed the concerto for mezzo soprano, percussion, and orchestra of Sofia Gubaidulina. Are more contemporary composers in the works, either in recital or an operatic role? You're looking forward to?
Yes, I was always a big fan of contemporary music. Since I started to sing or to study in high schools, in conservatory, in opera houses, so I always was interested to meet new composers, even very young composers, and perform their music. So many of them, they met me, and we did wonderful art together. But Sofia Gubaidulina, it was a very special occasion because this music, I like the work of Sofia Gubaidulina, her art, and it was a special event in her honor in London. And I was very touched and honored to perform there because it's very special moment in your life. You know, something it's more special than something special you even performing every night on stage, because for us each performance is very special. But Sofia Gubaidulina's work, it was special for me also because of the poet Marina Tsvetaeva from the Silver Century, who I adore and admire, and whose poetry I really love from the childhood. So, and also Sofia Gubaidulina wrote this piece the year I was born. So many things, came together, and I took it as a sign, you know, and it was really good turn in my life after that.
Mm-hmm. You'll also be performing this Sunday as part of the Opera in the Park concert. What will you be singing then?
Voglio sapete. Because I think it's important to give people idea and also to let them know what's going on stage during the first opening and the opening the season, because not many people, they can come and buy tickets for many reasons. Right. Family, children, many reasons you have.
So many more people come to the operas.
But in park, they can listen different kind of music styles. They can see the beauty of the opera music, and they can be also united by the music. I think it's absolutely great idea to have such incredible open space, open air concerts for the people who live here, for the family. It's really great. I mean, it's absolutely fantastic idea, and I support all the time. And really, if they will ask me to perform full concert, I will perform full concert. I think it's no doubt.
Well, tell us a little bit more about your character, Santuzza, in Mascagni's Cavalleria Rusticana.
Honestly, I don't like her character. I don't like her character. I don't understand some points. Like, you always think, I will never do like her or him because I am not like he or she. But in some moment, you turn to this exactly person. So let's say I don't want to be as Santuzza because her jealousy, her stupidity, her silly reflection, she destroyed all lives. She, like a hurricane, you know, growing up and making the destroy everywhere. Like, I think not because she wanted, she's a bad person. She's not a bad, she's a victim of herself. And she's maybe too young. It's always the question, what happened, why you decide to make this happen? You know, like Leo Tolstoy, he has a wonderful novel, After the Ball. Like, we have the question after this, after reading this novel, why this man made this, like, it happened because of the society, because of his character, or something else. You always have the, you have to choose how to go, you know, which way, which road you will take. So Santuzza probably also, she has a way, she has a different ways to continue her life. But what we see on stage, also in a Metropolitan Opera production by David McQuicker, and here in Jose Cura production, we see that she is totally, the society it's totally dominated. And they didn't give her the a chance to not reflect like she did, you know. Mm-hmm. It was very difficult and precise control and total control of the society in this town or in the village when she lives. Mm-hmm. But her, I don't know, her little mind, her maybe young age, made such a big drama. But I love this opera and this Santuzza personage personally because of huge waves, let's say, of the drama music. So you can be very easily taken by the waves, you know. It's easy to perform. It's very difficult to perform and sing, but it's very difficult, it's very easy to feel. To feel the power of the drama. Mm-hmm. And it's so real, it's so natural, and each of us, even me on stage or as a public, as a audio, as a person who is taking this story and seeing from the distance, I think we can see in this situation on stage, we can see everyday drama in our lives. Mm-hmm.
The opera Verismo to its very definition. Now, we're going to hear a little bit of Voi lo sapete, which you mentioned you'll be singing Sunday. This will be from your recent Metropolitan Opera production. Coincidentally, and a lovely coincidence, the recently departed San Francisco opera conductor, Nicola Luisotti, was on the podium. You're on stage with Jane Bunnell. Set the scene for us, if you will, for Voi lo sapete.
This is the situation when... like everybody knew that she's in trouble, the Santuzza in trouble. Even mother of the man with whom Santuzza will have a child, probably, and who she loves very much, but he's very difficult. He is very young and going to be again, and he's again with his first love. Who promised to him to wait from the army, but next day she met the other guy and she married him. Well, it's very easy situation, and it unstoppable, I think, situation in our life, till we will be existed. And Santuzza in this aria, she is still into Mama Lucia, the mother of the guy Turiddu. All story how it happened, how she became a victim of the situation. Mm-hmm. And she's telling quietly in the beginning, and step by step she's telling the story of jealousy of the other girl, Lola, who she is thinking took the guy Turiddu. Mm-hmm. Because of jealousy. Mm-hmm. But both women, they really not winners in this story, unfortunately.
Let's hear that now. Thank you so much for taking some time, Ekaterina. We look forward to the performances here. I hope you have fun in the park on Sunday as well.
Thank you very much, David. I'm very, very grateful to be invited for your wonderful program. And talking a bit about music, about artists, myself, and about wonderful, wonderful opera.
Come visit us next time. Soprano, mezzo-soprano Ekaterina Semenchuk, and an excerpt from Voi lo sapete from Cavalleria Rusticana, the Met recent production conducted by Nicola Luisotti. Daniele Caligari will be on the podium in his San Francisco Opera conducting debut, conducting seven performances of Cavalleria Rusticana and Pagliacci through the end of this month, including the grand opening night of the opera, this Friday evening at 7:30, brush off those tails and we'll see you on the red carpet or perhaps on a red blanket in the park on Sunday at 1:30.
Well, in an unusual coincidence, in talking about opera today, the great tenor Luciano Pavarotti died on this day in 2007. From the beginning of his professional career in 1961 in Italy to his final performance of Nessun Dorma at the 2006 Winter Olympics in Turin, Pavarotti was at his best in bel canto operas, Aida Verdi roles, pre-Aida Verdi roles, that is, and Puccini works such as La Bohème, Tosca, and Madame Butterfly. Here he is singing the famous Vesti la giubba aria from Pagliacci.
Recitare mentre preso dal delirio non so più quel che dico e quel che faccio eppure dopo sforzati ma sei tu forse l'arma
Luciano Pavarotti died this date in 2007, pancreatic cancer. From Pagliacci, Vesti la giubba, the iconic aria from the opera, which opens the San Francisco opera season tomorrow evening with the double bill of Leoncavallo's Cavalleria Rusticana, Italian tenor Marco Barti in the Vesti la giubba role of Canio the Clown in that production. sfopera.com for more information. I'm David Latulippe. It's been a pleasure bringing you Open Air this day for this week. Pleasure to thank my producer, Neil Swinkles, for herding cats and arranging the calendar. Join us next week if you can. I'll be talking with conductor Michael Morgan along with Ragnar Bolin about their upcoming performances as conductors and artistic directors. We'll also have cast members of Andrew Lloyd Webber's Phantom of the Opera on the show. Join us next week for Open Air. A reminder that our programs are archived at KALW.org. Thanks for listening.